Hey, my name is Lindsay Anderson.
And I'm Ellen Flannery Schroeder.
And you're listening to The Great Estate, a podcast about parenting.
We've got 6 kids and 2 PhDs in psychology between us, so we mostly know what we're doing.
Yeah, but not all the time. When our children throw us a curveball, we fall back on some basic parenting principles that are known to promote healthy and happy kids.
So that's what we're going to talk about today. Strategies for navigating difficult moments and keeping a sense of humor about ourselves.
And our kids.
Okay. Are you kidding? Are you serious?
Being serious.
Lindsay, got any problems?
Yes. Yes, I do, in fact.
I find that probably more of my problems are actually problems that aren't yet problems, but that I fear might become problems.
The anticipated problem.
Yeah. Which leads me to the first step in problem solving, which is, do you have a problem or not? I work with a lot of anxious kids, and I often have to talk to them about, well, you know, you're worried about X, Y, or Z. It didn't happen yet. Do you know that this problem is going to befall you? No. So it's actually not a problem.
So the first step in problem solving is figure out whether or not you have a problem.
Exactly.
I think that sometimes that is a really tricky part because there are times when, we can say, okay, I don't really have a problem. But for kids, figuring out whether or not they have a problem
is hard.
Is really difficult.
Right. And in the example I gave, maybe worrying is the problem. But that leads to sort of the second step, which is defining what the problem is. Exactly. What is the problem? So it's not this situation that may or may not occur, but it's my worry or anxiety or fear about that situation happening. So that if I'm going to solve my problem, I'm going to put my emphasis on my worry as opposed to problem solving potential solutions to a problem which may or may not occur.
I think that oftentimes I underestimate the number of things that my children perceive to be problems and the need to help coach them through instead of just solve those problems.
Right.
So things like my middle daughter is chronically getting caught in her clothes when she's trying to get undressed for the bath. Uh-huh. And she's at an age now where she should be able to undress herself. And she just fights. She fights and fights and fights with being unable to pull her shirt over her head. And so slowing her down in those moments where she is literally starting to scream, it requires a lot of parental patience and slowing down myself because invariably all of this is happening amidst all sorts of other chaos in the home.
Right.
But saying, you know, what is the problem right now? And, okay, slow down. Pull yourself back into your shirt. And can you do this one step at a time? Because if you try and do everything all at once, then you are, in fact, going to get tangled in your shirt.
You know what I love about that story? That you did not swoop in to save the day and solve the problem.
Yeah, well, usually that's because my hands are full.
Well, but I think that's a parent's natural tendency to sort of swoop in, solve the problem, be the hero, and not because they want to do it to be the hero, but that's a nice secondary benefit. But I think parents are doing it because they want to protect the child from distress, because that's what good parenting is.
Well, that's what we're told good parenting is. Right. I don't know that that is actually what good parenting is because I think some distress is actually really important. Right. I don't think kids actually learn how to problem solve unless they also learn how to feel and tolerate and work through distress. And one of my favorite stories related to that, my youngest child who loves to crawl underneath the table gets stuck there. She can't quite figure out how to get herself back out again underneath the chairs, and she'll get herself under a chair, and then she will try and stand up, and she'll hit her head, and then she'll try and back up, and she'll hit the leg of the chair, and then she'll try and turn around, and she'll hit her shoulder, and it really takes a lot of maneuvering for her to actually figure out how to free herself from being underneath the table, but it is incredibly impressive to watch her naturally and pretty instinctively solve that problem on her own if I don't save her from the distress. If I jump in, then she's very happy to have me pull out the chair, but she can do it.
Right.
And I deny her the opportunity to learn that if I am
and
always helping.
And you deny her the opportunity to feel a sense of competence and success.
Mm-hmm.
when she finally emerges from under the table. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and with older kids, you know, the problems that they encounter, it feels like it's about brainstorming. You know, that is sort of a natural next step in the problem-solving process is
brainstorming potential solutions to the problem.
Right. So this is my problem. What can I do about it? What are my options here? And when, as a parent, you are trying to coach your child through that process, being sure to include options that are both good and not good. So things like throwing a temper tantrum, because that is an option when you are faced with a problem.
Right. Albeit not a good one.
Right. Not necessarily
productive.
But when
you're making that brainstorming list, you're not evaluating whether the proposed solution is good or bad. You're just brainstorming.
Putting it all out on the table.
And the more wild and elaborate ideas you put down, the more engaged the child is. Mm-hmm. In problem solving with you.
Mm-hmm. And the less stressful the process feels
and
because it doesn't feel so pressured.
Exactly.
And it does feel like fun. Then problem solving actually becomes an engaging activity. And how many different ways can I solve this problem? Does it in fact have more than one solution?
Right.
And which solution do I like best? Because that is mind-blowing for some kids.
And it's terrific when you see the kids after you've brainstormed this big long list of good and bad options and you've gone through and you've evaluated each one. You've crossed off all the bad ones and you retain all of the good ones. And then you say, okay, which one are we going to try? And kids are so super eager to try those.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're happy to attempt to solve the problem. What could be better than that?
And then afterwards, you get to go back and say, all right, what worked?
Right.
We had all of these proposed solutions.
Yeah.
Did it work? Did it not work? Why did it work? What might we have done differently? Did we get the outcome that we wanted? And would you do it again? Is this what you're going to try the next time that you encounter this problem?
Every problem has a solution. I just think that's a really important life perspective to take on, that no matter what challenge or problem you're faced with,
mm-hmm.
there is a resolution that comes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, following winter is spring each and every year.
Well, and above and beyond that, there's also the, you know, when someone in my family, one of my children says, you know, I can't do it, to communicate to your kids, no, it's not that you can't do it, it's that you can't do it yet.
Right.
You know, helping them to see themselves as agents of change and capable of growth and, you know, able to keep working through things. I think that too is a major mind shift for kids at a certain age. You know, it's not that you can't do it. It's that you can't do it yet, but you're getting better.
Exactly. And we know research supports that.
Mm-hmm.
That kids who were told that they were smart as opposed to told that they were hard workers. So the kids who were told that they were smart work less. They spend less time solving a difficult problem. And the kids who were told that they are hard workers persist longer
mm-hmm.
on tasks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, when kids think that they're capable of solving problems or overcoming challenges, you know, they're more inclined to try.
Exactly. Growth mindset.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I have found that I have had to be a really conscientious model when it comes to problem solving in my family, and that it has been very helpful for me to talk about the different obstacles or barriers or problems that I encounter on a day-to-day basis. Because I am in no way a baker or a chef, most of my problems occur in the kitchen. And I think that has been really fascinating for my children to see me attempt things like baking and failing miserably and trying to figure out, is there anything redeemable about this experience?
It's so funny, Lindsay, because I remember a time just a few years ago that you were attempting a spice cake, some sort of baked to good, and I don't know if an ingredient was forgotten, but what happened was it got taken out of the oven too early.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this?
I mean, it's so far, it sounds like every single baking effort that I make.
So it came out of the oven too early. It wasn't fully cooked, but it wasn't known at the time that it came out of the oven. And I remember you saying, and I thought it was just so creative. You were like, yeah, we'll have it on ice cream.
That's exactly what we do.
Yeah.
Because invariably everything comes out half cooked somehow, no matter how many times I stick the knife in it to see if it's done or not. And I think that that type of problem solving and reframing of an experience has been really adaptive for my children. And
absolutely,
it's not just baking, for better or worse, but I set the smoke alarm off and I do all sorts of, I have all sorts of mishaps in the kitchen. And having my kids watch me encounter those problems and, you know, scrap things and say, hey, no big deal, or try and find a way to reimagine whatever it was that I was making, like, oh, I wasn't really trying to make banana bread. I was always trying to make
an ice cream topping. I can remember playing a game with my daughter when she was little. She was and still is a little bit perfectionistic. And so if she was drawing something and the drawing wasn't going exactly the way that she wanted, she would often want to scrap it. And I would say, wait, don't scrap it. Let's just turn it into something else. And so we'd take that line that was supposed to be the cat's ears and we would turn it into a lion's tail or something else. And it was great fun. And I think an important lesson to her, which is, you know, sometimes mistakes are good. We learn from them. They lead to other productive ideas.
And creativity.
Absolutely.
And it does require creativity on parents' parts. I think that it requires that parents are creative in the ways that they are coaching their children through problems, and that parents are patient and flexible and creative about the way that they model their own failings and their own encounters with difficulties, and that we be really mindful.
So what did we cover? Here's four basic principles that we discussed today. Principle one, know the steps of problem solving. Step one, do you have a problem? Step two, what is the problem? Step three, brainstorm potential solutions. Four, review them and choose one or two to try out. Five, go for it and see if it works. If not, go back to step one and restart.
Principle two, don't problem solve for your kids. Allow for a little bit of struggle and see what they're capable of.
Principle three, model your own problem solving attempts. Allow your children to see you struggle as you work to resolve a problem. They will learn from watching you.
And principle four, reframe a problem. Sometimes an undercooked banana bread is the perfect ice cream topping. I'm Lindsay Anderson.
And I'm Ellen Flannery Schroeder.
And you just listened to a Greatest Eight podcast written and produced by Drs. Lindsay Anderson and Ellen Flannery Schroeder. Associate producer and engineer was Ian Reyes.
For more information related to parenting for mental health or to listen to podcasts on other topics, please visit thegreatest8.org.
That's thegreatest8.org. These podcasts were developed by the University of Rhode Island and South County Health, with support from URI, the Rhode Island Foundation, and the Van Buren Charitable Foundation.